Hey, y'all, Scott here. I think you ought to consider subscribing to The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation, in print or online. The Future of Freedom features the best writers in the libertarian movement, the fearless Jacob Hornberger, individualist anarchist Sheldon Richman, and crusading journalist Jim Bovard, along with Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Tim Kelly, Richard Ebling, and many more. And the July issue features one by your favorite radio host on America's Middle East policy, entitled Stupidity or the Plan. So head on over to fff.org/subscribe and sign up for The Future of Freedom in print or online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton, and we are joined on the phone live by Daniel Ellsberg, the most dangerous man in America, the heroic liberator of the Pentagon Papers. Welcome back to the show. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. We'll tell your listeners that you just informed me 30 seconds ago that Bradley Manning was found not guilty of aiding the enemy. That's very, very important and good news, because the alternative would have been extremely bad news. It would have been very close to being a death knell over time to investigative journalism in this country, which means a free press, which means ultimately democracy or any possibility of democratic control of our foreign policy, our defense policy, and totally. If the prosecutor's argument that is simply giving information to the internet and thereby making it available to the world, including whatever enemies we had, if that is enough to earn a death sentence or a life in prison without any attempt even to prove or indicate intent to harm the United States or to help an enemy. That's the argument the prosecutor was making in the charges they pursued ever since Bradley Manning pled guilty to 10 military offenses, which could still keep him in prison for 20 years. And I haven't seen the full verdict here, so it may well be that she has added some other offenses to that, which may add up to a life sentence. In my case, I didn't face one single count that carried a death sentence, such as the aiding the enemy charge in this case did. But I had 12 felony counts, which added up to 115 years in prison. So the effect was much the same. That could still be the case here. The truth is that he did not deserve a day in prison for informing the public here. As he did, he certainly does not deserve an additional day after the abusive treatment he's received here of 3 years awaiting trial, 10.5 months in solitary confinement, part of that nude, a treatment which was described by the UN Rapporteur for Torture as, if not being torture, and he didn't have all the facts there because he hadn't been allowed to speak to Manning alone, but he said, at the very least, it was cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment, which is the definition of a crime under the Geneva Conventions we've signed and under domestic law. So he should have been released on the grounds of governmental misconduct, as was the case in my trial, but it wasn't. And this charge of aiding the enemy should have been dropped earlier. It was absurd and ominous and had the most ominous implications for journalism in general in this country and for our learning what our government is doing. Might also mention that charge is one of two charges in the Universal Code of Military Justice that is not confined to military personnel, but says any person who does this. And so it has, it's even more ominous than it might be. So given that that's taken out, which frankly I've been saying yesterday was 50-50 in my mind looking at the judge's behavior, and others who follow the trial have said they thought the odds were greater than that, this is good.
Yeah. Well, you know, the way that the judge had helped the prosecution redefine the charges at the last minute there, some of the charges, not the aiding the enemy charges, that made me, you know, you're a hell of an optimist, Dan. If you were giving it 50-50, I was worried that it was a much smaller chance than that. But so this is really great news. Now,
oh, it is. I was refusing to be interviewed the day before the trial. I had a number of proposals to be interviewed the day before the sentence and the verdict. And I said, what's the use of that? You know, wait for the verdict. But in my own mind, I did not want to rehearse beforehand how bad I was going to feel if and foresee
yeah.
if, in fact, he was found guilty of aiding the enemy. So I sufficient under the day is the evil thereof. My father used to quote the Bible, and I thought, okay, I'll wait for the verdict. I'm glad that I did now, and in this respect, it's very good. Mm. And we'll see what the rest. There's several other stages to this now. I presume it's already available, and I haven't seen it yet. What else she's finding him guilty of, other than the 10 charges that he pled guilty to? That there was remaining 12 charges, including the aiding the enemy. You don't know offhand, Scott?
I'm looking at Alexa O'Brien's Twitter feed now, Dan, and she has found him guilty of espionage for the Iraq war logs, for the Afghan war diaries, and the Gitmo files. Those are three different espionage charges,
at least. Not guilty. Now, having been the first person who was prosecuted for a leak under the Espionage Act. Let me correct you, Scott, and a lot of other people who describe this as espionage. The way it's described legally is it is a non-espionage charge under the so-called Espionage Act. Mm. It's 18 U.S.C. 793, paragraphs D and E. It's known as the Espionage Act because before my prosecution, it was used only against spying, only against espionage, giving information to an enemy with intent to help that enemy or a foreign power, if not an enemy, a foreign power, intent to help them or to harm the United States. In my case, they did not charge espionage. In fact, the prosecutor made a motion, which was accepted by the judge, that the word espionage should not be used in the courtroom, lest it give the jury the impression that an absurd charge was being made, since it was obvious that neither my intent nor my actions were espionage. So even so, I've often been described as having been charged with espionage. In this case, he's charged with, and convicted, it seems, at this stage, and I'm afraid later, of violations of 18 U.S.C. 793. Actually, this is a military trial, but he's the second person ever to be convicted by a jury, and in this case a judge, of that charge. The only other person was Samuel Loring Morrison, a dozen years after my case was dismissed for governmental misconduct, was found by a jury guilty of that violation, which Bradley is now the second person. There have been seven prosecutions, indictments brought by Obama under that act, of which Bradley Manning was one. And there were only three by prior presidents, no president more than one. So Obama has now brought more than twice as many indictments under that law as any other. And to call it espionage in a way makes it sound absurd, because it obviously isn't espionage. And as I say, that is actually incorrect. But to use that law in that fashion is to use it as if it were a British Official Secrets Act, which criminalizes any and all release of classified information. And that is, in fact, a very ominous development itself for investigative journalism, because if any release of classified information, which after all occurs usually anonymously every day, in other words, there are thousands of cases and not seven, and not 700, it would be closer to 7,000 over a long period, of which Obama has prosecuted just seven. But if this is upheld, it will be one more precedent that will encourage Obama to bring even more cases. And even though, then, leakers, people who give unauthorized disclosure of information that the public needs to know and for which there will be no authorization because the government doesn't want the public to know it because it's criminal, deceptive, reckless, irresponsible, whatever, it would be embarrassing, so they will not authorize information on that. And unauthorized disclosure will now not carry a death sentence or in itself a life sentence, but a multiplication of those could be a life sentence, and even one can be 10 years. So that's more than enough disincentive to keep us from having the information we need to avert wars like Vietnam and Iraq. So this is bad. This is bad news, but it could have been a lot worse. That's what I'd have to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, now there's been a lot of smears, and you know, TV hardly covers this subject of Bradley Manning and what he did and the trial and everything else at all. And when they do mention him, it's always with a smear and a sneer, and always taking the government side. I was wondering if you could remark about what you understand about Bradley Manning's motives for leaking the Iraq and Afghan war logs.
Hear Bradley Manning, and when I read what he said in the chat logs and whatever, I'm hearing myself when I was twice his age 40 years ago, and I know my motives, and I perceive the same motives in each case, to save lives, to shorten a wrongful, hopeless, stalemated war, to do so by informing the public and challenging them to live up to the Constitution in an unconstitutional war, to live up to our ideals of democracy and of non-aggression, rather than fighting an aggressive war, as Iraq, the war that Manning was involved in, was an aggressive war from start to finish. Moreover, so I see his motives as admirable, and indeed, in his case, I think without the revelation that he made of American atrocities over there, which have been covered up by Americans, we would still have 10 to 20,000 American troops in harm's way in Iraq, because Prime Minister Maliki there would have allowed immunity for our troops, which was the condition for their remaining. Given the revelations that Manning made through WikiLeaks, the immunity was impossible for Maliki to give, since it was obvious that we would not prosecute American atrocities and would cover them up and lie about them instead. And therefore, we couldn't keep the troops there, although Obama wanted to do it. So he has taken at least 10,000 troops out of harm's way in Iraq, even though many of them were in our general imperial mode here, switched to Afghanistan, where they are subject to dying and killing hopelessly and wrongfully as well. So it's a long process here. He did the right thing. I did the right thing then. I haven't always done the right thing, the best thing in my life. But doing what Bradley Manning did at a younger age was right for me then, and it's right for him now. So he will always be a hero of mine.
All right, now, Dan, before you leaked from the RAND Corporation, all that, you were a Marine. You know all this, the matter of all, and obviously charged as you were by the Nixon goons. Clearly, you're very familiar with the legalities of all of this. So what I wonder is if you could answer, according to Manning, the situation that he was put in of helping the Iraqi police arrest and then presumably torture people for writing articles, never mind morality and what's just the right thing, but what was his legal obligation at that point when his commanding officer ordered him to continue?
First, to reveal to his commanding officer, well, to his superior officer, what he had discovered, and he was very excited by that, and he ran, as everybody has agreed, he ran to the officer to tell him that he had discovered that these people were wrongfully convicted, wrongfully held, and were going to be tortured and should be released. The first point was that his superior officer told him that he should forget that. Don't worry about that. His job was collecting more suspects on the same basis as before and handing them over to the Iraqis. We got points for that, giving them prisoners to torture. And that's what he should do. Now, that was an illegal response. The legal response would have been investigate this further and do what we can to stop it. We are legally obligated to do that. So the order not to investigate and not to act was an illegal order. Under Nuremberg, it's blatantly illegal, and he, I think, knew that. Certainly, if you recognize it as such, it's your Nuremberg obligation to disobey an illegal order. Well, there was testimony during this trial by other members there that he came back and was very upset, quote, very concerned, quote, that nobody was concerned about this situation, that people, other people weren't worrying about it, and that we were torturing innocent people, and that bothered him a lot. So since there was obviously a cover-up going on, he couldn't really go higher in the chain of command with any prospect of doing it. He ended up doing exactly what he should have done, and that was exposing this situation to the American people in the hope, which his own defense attorney suggests may have been, quote, naive. I would like to think that it was not totally naive. If he thought that there was certain we would stop that practice if he only exposed it, that would be naive, inexperienced. But he didn't. He hoped that the American people would respond to this and be concerned as he was and stop it. Well, the hope hasn't been particularly satisfied, I have to say. I am very reluctant to say that it was an absurd, naive hope, that there's no hope that Americans will rise to this sort of thing. But there is an interesting contrast. I'm sure Snowden, when he released stuff to the American people, was thought to be, could be described as naive. But again, he thought his greatest fear, he said, was that nothing would change. Well, that's likely. The probabilities are that nothing will change. But there really is a kickback on this one, and 205 people in Congress voted to rein in the NSA as a result of Snowden's revelations, a very big effect. Now, that's a quite contrast to what happened with Manning, and as I see it, and I'm not happy to say this as an American or a human, let's say, but it is the case that what Manning was revealed was what we were doing to other people, not our enemies, civilians, babies, infants, children, women, old people and whatnot, but not Americans, others. They were over there, collateral damage. And the American people, some of whom got very concerned, and Manning has gotten a number of awards, as you know, from minority factions in this country, and he does have support. But the majority aren't very concerned about it. In the Snowden case, he showed that every one of us in America is having our conversations recorded and stored for later retrieval, TiVo'd in effect, even though not listened to in real time. And the American people are concerned about that. A lot of, not all of them, but more than half are concerned, and there may really be a change. So that is a promising development here, that there will be a revolt against this, these abuses by the government. And if the Bradley Manning case were happening in a vacuum, it would be almost nothing but bad news. As it is, it's could have been worse. The guilty, the aiding the enemy charge was dismissed properly by the judge, and that wasn't entirely foreseeable. And it is Bradley Manning inspired Snowden. As Snowden has said, he admired Bradley Manning. He said he admired me also. That's a long time ago. And he was directly influenced by Manning, and he learned from Manning's example not to release the stuff and stay in the country. Snowden would be in a cell like Manning right now, incommunicado, not able to take part in the debate over these issues, which is, in this case, a real debate, had he made his releases while he was in the country. So he learned from Manning's case. Manning contributed to that, and for what happens if we do manage to get the National Security Agency under some kind of democratic oversight and control, which it does not suffer at this moment. It's out of control. It's responsible to the president. But the president and NSA are, at this moment, out of informed control by the public or Congress or the courts. And if that changes, which may happen, and I hope it will happen, Bradley Manning will deserve some direct credit for that. And I'm going to leave it at that, if you will, Scott.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan. I sure appreciate your time on the show again, as always.
Thanks for calling. Bye.
All right, everybody, that is the American hero, Daniel Ellsberg. He's the liberator of the Pentagon Papers. And he's the author of the book Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. He's the subject of the documentary film The Most Dangerous Man in America, His website is Ellsberg.net, and his Twitter handle is Daniel Ellsberg. And did I leave anything out? He's the American hero who ended the Vietnam War. We'd probably still be at war in Vietnam right now if it wasn't for him. That's what I think. All right.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for thebumpersticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. Thebumpersticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. Thebumpersticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including How to End the War on Terror, The Case Against War with Iran, Central Banking in War, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, The Ongoing War on Civil Liberties, and of course, Why Everything in the World is Woodrow Wilson's Fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more details. See you there.
Hey, all, Scott here, inviting you to check out Modern Times Magazine at moderntimesmagazine.com. It's a great little independent publication out of Phoenix, Arizona, featuring unique views on economics, politics, foreign policy, sports, and music, with great art scene coverage and fiction writing as well. That's Modern Times Magazine at moderntimesmagazine.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.